Welcome, welcome, welcome to another edition of New Track Record Podcast. Caleb Hatch with you and joining us from the Florida Bureau tonight for this week's episode, Justin Kinney. Hello, Justin.
Hello, Caleb. Yes, boots on the ground here. I got some big meetings set up here in the final couple days in Florida. Really trying to get the Walt Disney Speedway refurbished and potentially get it back on the schedule for 2022. So enjoying my time in Pensacola Beach this week, but business and pleasure as really going to meet with some Disney big wigs tomorrow. See if we can't make that happen.
So safer walls, are they on the track yet?
Well, they got Armco barriers, and I've informed them pretty convincingly that I think you're going to give Romain Grosjean some nightmares if he shows up and sees those. So that is issue number one, but we'll feel it out, see what we can do.
No grandstands, no scoring tower, a few other amenities lacking as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think we can go for an old school feel here. I really feel like, no scoring pylon, people being let know laps based on, cards being held up and boards from pit road. I really think we can embrace that. People have mentioned IndyCar maybe having a throwback weekend. What says throwback more than no safer barriers, no scoring pylon, and, no big grandstands for people?
So it sounds like it's going really well.
Oh, yeah, it's going very well. No, in all seriousness, down here, Pensacola Beach, spring break, wife and son and my son's friend down here enjoying great weather. Had some storms move through this morning, but it's cleared up here on Thursday. I went parasailing today. I was very nervous. I'm not a heights guy, but my son wanted to do it, so somebody had to take him up there. So survived that and caught some of the tests today, as much as there was at least. And looking forward to a nice day down here tomorrow, our final full day down here, and then what should be a better day of on-track activity Friday at the Speedway.
Correct, yeah. So, interesting start to the session. We were, 10 or so minutes in. Rinus VK hits the wall almost head-on. That was a scary-looking crash. Thankfully, he walked away. Reports later that he broke a finger. But scary crash there. And it was kind of bizarre because it's not like he got too low. It's almost like his car was drifting going into the turn. He was already sliding, and then just like that, it whipped around.
Initially, I thought he got too low, and we were trading texts back and forth. And then you said, no, it doesn't look like he got too low below the white line. It just kind of got pushed down there. And with the wind that when they showed the windsock at the beginning of testing on the pylon, I mean, it was just whipping. And I know a lot of them say they go by the flags that are on the pagoda, which were not up today. So they had to go, more on what they were gathering on top of their pit boxes, but also that windsock. It was going crazy. And, they talked to Rinus VK after he was released from the infield care center. And it was almost like he anticipated. This is the thing that we hear from so many drivers is when you anticipate something at the speedway, that's when it bites you. And it just sounded like Rinus VK entering turn one says, well, this is how it was last year, or this is how I'm supposed to drive in these conditions. So that's what he did. And the weather conditions, namely the wind, really yanked his car and made him crash. So that's a lesson learned, and that's just going to be something that Rinus VK has to learn. That, look, you have to learn the track before you really race the track every single time you go out there, no matter what time of day it is, what time of the year it is, what year it is, period, because every time it's different. And I think that lesson was ingrained into Rinus VK today.
He tweeted after the crash, note to self, don't post on social media. You're ready for the season with testing still to go. Nasty wind from the side swept me into the wall. Broken finger, but good to go again. Sorry to the team. These days we're meant to get as many laps, and I'm gutted we can't do that now. So glad he's okay. The broken finger shouldn't really have much of an impact on him for tomorrow. But, could definitely come into play for Barber, a track that's very physical, so that's something to at least keep in mind. So after the VK crash, it was clean for a total of about, what, an hour and a half or so, and then we had rain. Then you're thinking, all right, well, we'll be lucky to get back on track. And then it started to dry out and get sunny, and then there was more rain. But they were able to get going about, what, a little after 6 Eastern, I think. And Sebastian Bourdais, with the quick times, they ran until 7:15, so pretty late in the day. But Sebastian Bourdais with a 224.427-mile-an-hour lap in that refresher rookie session. So the fastest time goes to a Voigt car. Sage Karam, 222 miles an hour, second. Elio with the Meyer Shank Racing car, 221 in third. So there's your top three in day one of testing. So nothing really major to take away from this. I mean, you don't want to overthink testing. But I will say this. Cody Ware was, I think, the guy that you had to have your eyes on in that refresher slash rookie session in the 52 car, which, you know, by him being at this test, you would expect him to be in the 52 for the Indy 500 and then the select other races that the Dale Coyne Racing with Rick Ware Racing entry is set to compete in this season. But, you know, that's the guy where you're thinking, I don't know. But 214.876-mile-an-hour lap on his last lap of the day after doing 49 laps, kept it clean. The only yellow they had in that late session was just due to a track inspection. So I will say, Cody Ware, solid job. You know, that's the thing you're concerned about is the lack of experience. I mean, he had the Sebring test, then he had the Texas test a week ago with Pietro Fittipaldi and completes day one cleanly. And I think that's a big jump for him. And, you know, I'm not going to get into, you know, who passed their refresher and all that, you know, because I think these guys have shown through and Gal have shown through this first session today that that's not really going to be a concern. But I will say Cody Ware, impressive to keep it clean in day one.
Right. Despite our opinions, Caleb, which we've made plain on whether Cody Ware should be or should not be in this field, or at least competing for the 500, they had out of trouble today. I saw a couple of tweets, you know, kind of mentioning, you know, the you could tell the nerves in the voice of Cody Ware on the radio and Rick Ware as well. First time at the Speedway at speed. And but they got away clean. They got an intact race car heading into tomorrow, which not every team can say that right now. So kudos to Cody Ware. And, you know, my other point with the refresher course is can we figure out a way to change the requirements of this thing? I mean, I know Elio's with a new team and Juan Pablo's with a new team. I don't understand why they get to go out and guys like Scott McLaughlin don't.
Yeah, he was considered a veteran because I guess he had passed a test at IMS previously, but it's just kind of ridiculous, right?
Right, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, something needs to change because Scott McLaughlin,
he's a rookie.
He's a rookie on the racetrack and he doesn't get the refresher. I understand. And then guys that have won the 500 multiple times are in the refresher?
Well, and McLaughlin tweeted about that. He's like, with the, you know, the hands up emoji, like, I don't understand either. But, you know, it's Cody Ware, Pietro Fittipaldi, they at least pass rookie orientation. So Scott McLaughlin, for whatever reason, is classified as a veteran. So I guess he's good to go.
He's a rookie in the series.
Right?
And he's not participating in rookie orientation. I don't understand.
That one is confusing, to say the least. But, you know, Cody Ware got it done, and he got it done. I saw that Nathan Brown of the Indy Star tweeted that he had lost the lap time feature on his steering wheel, so that's pretty hard to do the increments when you can't view that on your steering wheel.
Yeah, I saw that. And then conversely, you know, IndyCar officials telling Juan Pablo and Elio to please keep it within 210 to 215 to mark it off on their things. I mean, it's probably just a stroll you know, it's just a Sunday stroll for those two guys going 215. But, you know, that just goes back to the absurdity of that thing, is that, you know, those guys are having to cross off those to-do lists. And yet Scott McLaughlin is sitting there like, hey, I could really, really use those laps.
Max Chilton, Sage Karam, only veterans that need to finish their third phase. I think they're going to be okay. I think they know how to wheel it around IMS. So let's get to some of the other takeaways from today. I think really the off-track stuff is the bigger story with where we're at on day one of testing. So many announcements that have come down. Let's start with the biggest one of the day. And I had seen rumors out there that there was a chance that J.R. Hildebrand, you know, could be in a fourth car at Foyt. That coming from a Marshall Pruitt article on Racer.com a couple days before, because he said, of the anticipated entries missing from the list of 32, Andretti Autosport's sixth driver will not take part in the test. A.J. Foyt Racing's third and fourth entries aren't included, and Top Gun Racing won't be present with R.C. Enerson. So Top Gun Racing, R.C. Enerson is an entry that's not confirmed. A.J. Foyt's third and fourth entries are now confirmed with Charlie Kimball, which was announced several months ago. But then this morning, J.R. Hildebrand announced ABC Supply back with Foyt. So it's good to see them back, at least for IMS, in a car that's a tribute car to A.J.'s winning car, what, in 61?
Yeah, 61. So it's the, what, the 50th, 60th?
70th? Let's see. Yeah, that'd be the 70th. It'll have car number one, so they got the number on loan from Chip Ganassi Racing. This is my favorite livery so far. And not that it's a surprise, because J.R. Hildebrand always seems to get really cool-looking race cars.
He absolutely does. Now, it's a really cool race car livery, even without the tribute, I feel. But when you add what it means with the one on there and the red nose and all that, it's just a really cool throwback. Looks a little bit different than the 61 car for sure, but really cool and appreciative to Chip Ganassi for loaning the one. I mean, it doesn't sound like a big deal, but when you're the champion and you're the one car and you can run the one, but you know, sometimes, you know, Chip Ganassi, they end up not. You know, Scott Dixon sometimes likes to stick with the nine.
Yeah, he's
really appreciative.
He's never run the one since, 2004, when they just had a disaster of a season after he won the title, his first title in 2003. So, yeah, good on them to loan the number, because they're definitely not going to use it. I think the other big announcement we saw today was the unveiling of the American Legion number 48 car for Tony Kanaan in the Indy 500. A couple of great ads. They had a kind of like a "This is Sports Center, but this is Ganassi" that was released yesterday, with Jimmy Johnson trying to find the 48 car, and then Tony Kanaan sitting on the race car under the covering as Jimmy Johnson walks into the shop. They released that today for the unveiling. Great video. Tony Kanaan, IndyCar legend. Shout out in the video.
Every time I get, now I don't want to take credit that's why it's mentioned all the time, but you know, a part of me just wants to be like, man, that's all us, man. That's all us.
That is our brand. We need to come up with a t-shirt or something, because it's too good. So I think that's
we need to make matching shirts that you have an Indy, or you know, Tony Kanaan is a legend shirt, and I have to have a shirt that says Tony Kanaan is not a legend.
Yeah, and we have to wear matching shirts for like qualifying or practice day or something.
Yeah, absolutely. But no, those were phenomenal. I mean, I watched them this morning, and that's when I watched all three, and literally laughing out loud. I mean, those are just great. That's what we're talking about. Like, it's not a science to it. You know, it's just showing the personality of drivers, having a little fun, and just perfectly executed. And it doesn't all have to be serious and reading from a card, going back to, the marketing campaign, you know, announced, which we'll get to shortly. It just works. It's just casual and off the cuff and funny. And, Definitely great job by Ganassi and perfectly executed by Tony Kanaan and Jimmy Johnson for sure.
Absolutely. Other announcements that came down today, this for Takuma Sato, Nissin Foods, which you're thinking, well, what's that? So Cup Noodles, which was on the car last year, full season associate sponsorship now for Takuma Sato. Announcement that came down the other day. X-Bell will be with Joseph Newgarden for three races, including both at Texas Motor Speedway and then the IndyCar NASCAR doubleheader August 14th race on the IMS Road Course. And I believe there's one other sponsor announcement that of note. Oh, of course, Juan Pablo Montoya. We had seen this, I think, in a Motorsport article a couple weeks back, but he was finally confirmed to be running the Indy GP as well. And then Marco Andretti announcement that he will run this year's Indy 500, sponsored by Gleaners Food Bank, also with associate sponsorship from Group 1001, which is Colton Herta's new sponsor. 98 car looks pretty solid, and Marco will have a chance to kind of right the ship after a disappointing run last year after winning the pole.
Exercise the demons a little bit, so to speak, and maybe the approach this year of not having to worry about an entire season and, you know, the minutia that goes along with that, maybe that will help Marco Andretti get a little bit of the monkey off their back, off his back, maybe not feel the pressure that I feel is thrust upon him every May with the same questions every single year. Maybe he can find some solace in that, some relaxation in that, and maybe, you know, execute during the race. He was great, obviously, in qualifying and the lead up to the 500 a year ago. And then, you know, did he even lead into the first turn?
No.
Definitely didn't lead the first lap.
Didn't lead any laps last year, finished 13th. I saw multiple people point this out, but look, there's a kind of a trend here. 2011, Dan Weldon with Brian Herta Autosport winner. 2016, Alexander Rossi with Andretti, partner with Brian Herta Autosport winner. So 2021, Marco Andretti.
Maybe.
Brian Herta Autosport car. Granted, Brian Herta's not on the stand. It's Michael Andretti, who's his race strategist for the 500. But hey, there could be something there.
Let's hope so. Nothing would please me more for sure than Marco getting a 500 win.
Oh, yeah. I think a vast majority of people are agreeing with you on that one. So not a lot of on-track stuff. I mean, we got into the VK crash, but I think the notable off-track announcements before we get into, you know, a quick look at day two schedule. But you look at the confirmations that we have so far, and I believe, and terrible at math, so don't trust me here, but I believe we're at 32 car and driver combos.
I believe I've seen 32. Yes. That's not counting what? That's not counting Top Gun?
Correct. That's not counting Top Gun, I just counted. And it's not counting Cody Ware in the 52. It's not counting Sage Karam in the, we presume, the 24. And it's not counting whatever number the sixth Andretti, whether it's Oliver Askew or Oriel Servia. So that would give us 36 entries, which that's quite the haul.
Yeah, for the year that we're coming off of. Now, I am not, and I've said this before, I'm not including Top Gun until they're confirmed, until they have an engine in the car and they're pushing it down gasoline alley, I'm going to doubt that they're... And the longer it goes, the less I expect that to happen, because as these other seats are filled, and we have heard and understand that Honda is full, and I can't imagine Chevy going out of its way to add a late engine deal to a team that's brand new to the Speedway. And we're not talking, you know, McLaren on a last-minute deal or somebody huge, you know what I mean? I think the longer we go, the less and less likely it's Top Gun Racing. I feel like at the end of the day, we could be talking about Top Gun Racing saying that they couldn't find an engine deal.
Every team that has, you know, a car they plan to enter, now I'm not saying the entries, you know, the four potential injuries that aren't car and driver combos, but every other team, I mean, we saw Cody Ware test, so there's one of them that's unannounced. Andretti, the six car, I mean, they're shopping people around. I think they also mentioned on Peacock today, Stefan Wilson, you know, could be in play for that as well. And they have five cars, so it's not a concern about if that car could be ready, but they're only going to do it if it's, you know, right, the money's right, the deal's right, everything of that nature. Sage Karam with Dryan Reinbold does not seem like as much of a lock, I guess, as I expected. Nathan Brown of the Indy Star tweeting earlier this week that the Sage Karam testing Thursday, Friday, IMS from Dryan Reinbold. According to Dennis Reinbold, the team is close to finalizing a deal for the 500, but for now, the longtime DRR driver will hop back into a familiar situation. So that deal not final. Also, the thing with the sixth Andretti, Nathan Brown saying that team is gearing up with the goal of fielding a six car next month's Indy 500. Said the team is in talks with a couple of drivers, hope to have something to announce soon. So we could what see that probably as soon as, you know, Barber or St. Pete.
Yeah, I feel like all of the above outside of Top Gun, I feel should be wrapped up by late this month at the latest.
And then the thing with Top Gun that's interesting, so Brown tweeted out, you know, Cody Ware will run his ROP, Kimball won't be running, Foyt testing two cars, which means there's a Chevy unaccounted for to get to 15. That Chevy isn't Top Gun Racing. So okay, looking back, that makes sense. That's their Dryan Reinbold Chevy. So I was going to say, right, does that mean they don't have a deal? But that just means for the test, they're not participating. Also, we got official word from James Davison, JD33 Davison on Twitter. As things stand, I won't be returning to the Indy 500 this year. I have a fantastic opportunity to run 26 races in the 2021 NASCAR Cup Series with COTA and Coke 600 clashing with Indianapolis. Found a home here in NASCAR that I'm really enjoying, want to make work. So do not expect James Davison essentially to be one of those guys.
Right. And, you know, I think he's done an admirable job in Cup, and he should focus on, you know, really what is the brightest part of his career right now, which is definitely in NASCAR. So don't blame him.
And then how could I forget this? Santino Ferrucci will be the third car for Rahal Lenormand Lanigan Racing, sponsored by Hy-Vee. He will be in the 45 entry. And is he set for the test? Am I mistaken?
He is set
for the test. Yeah. And then
now here's, and I don't know if you got on your list, and I honestly only saw a tweet about this,
mm-hmm,
about a teaser from James Hinchcliffe when asked about Robert Wickens. And I don't imagine it's a 500 ride, but at least is things being hinted that Robert Wickens could be returning to the seat at some point?
I do have a tweet, and let me get to the other Ferrucci Hy-Vee bit. So Hy-Vee will be the primary for Graham at Road America and the racetrack formerly known as Gateway. So that's a powerhouse team that Rahal has for the 500. Yes, you mentioned Wickens, and you know, I don't know what to read into this. Nathan Brown tweeting, I've seen some folks wondering about an update on Robert Wickens, and Hinchcliffe gives a very vague one. There's been rumblings around the paddock about something coming together for the former driver, the number six, and Hinchcliffe confirms as such on the Peacock TV broadcast. I did not catch the interview, so if anyone has kind of more insight on that, feel free to tweet at us on that.
Right, yeah, I don't know exactly what that means.
Right.
Does it mean a return to racing? Does it mean some sort of, I don't know. I don't know what to say. I would say driving a pace car, but he's done that already. Does it mean a test at some sort? I don't know. It was just kind of a teaser thrown out there that really caught my eye on Twitter today.
And then Juan Pablo Montoya, they had it on today's broadcast and a sit down with Marty Snyder of NBC, but also mentioned on a call earlier this week. Zach Brown had called him every single year about running the 500 since his last in 2017. But what changed? He's no longer a Team Penske driver in IMSA. This is the first year they can't say no. So that's the reason why he wasn't in the 500, which unfortunately that is what we expected, but that's just kind of where that was at. And it's a relief that he is back competing in the Indy 500 and also with the GP, and you know, hopefully he could run even more races.
Most definitely. And I think, in my opinion, I feel, and I know Pato is there, he would be my pick from McLaren with the best chance to win the 500.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to disagree with that due to his experience, the pedigree. Pato had a solid race last year. I believe he was fifth. So we'll see what Juan can do, but I feel like he elevates that whole program, not just his car, but I'm talking the whole three-car operation.
Right, absolutely. I mean, he's that guy, that steadying influence, that guy that's going to, at the very least, mentor the two younger drivers, but definitely gives that team an air of veteran stability that it hasn't always had since it entered IndyCar.
Any other observations you have from day one of the test?
It was tough to gauge. I think, you know, we're between VK's wreck and, you know, I know we got like an hour and change in before it started raining. There just wasn't a flow to the day, really.
Mm-hmm.
And I expect, you know, tomorrow to be a little better, hopefully, if the weather cooperates. So really, I think see these guys put up some numbers, run in traffic, get comfortable. I'm not putting much into timing and scoring, really. But, you know, who looks comfortable, who looks fast, who looks good in the draft, who looks good by themselves. You know, kind of those things that we can take out of this test. And then, you know, next month, because next month all of a sudden is May, then we can really start really zeroing in on what we've seen, you know, this, you know, today and tomorrow on what that means for the 500.
Yeah, I would agree. There wasn't really much of a flow due to the rain delays. But I will say, you know, Foyt, you can't read too much into testing time. But for Bourdais to have that speed, that's a good sign for him. Also, you have to take into account, though, that was later in the day. So it's going to be at a time when they're not running in May as far as on the track, unless there is a rain delay during the race or qualifying. I mean, they're not even going to run that late during practice sessions. So, you know, it's maybe right, slightly misleading, but 224, I mean, that's solid. I didn't see a no-toe report or anything like that, but I don't think we need to worry about that for now. The all-skate tomorrow, I think, will be much more of a takeaway on that. But like you said, you know, who's comfortable by themselves, who's comfortable in traffic? We didn't really get a gauge of that at all today just due to the nature of the test setup, but they'll be back tomorrow, Friday morning. So that 9 a.m. Eastern time will be the start time on Peacock. So they'll start earlier, and that's the setup for tomorrow.
And tell me, Caleb, with the weather, I know it's a less chance of rain tomorrow, but will it be overcast up there? Will it be sunny? Because, it, you know, it's cloudy, and that was conducive to a lot of grip and a lot of speed today, and I know it was windy, but you know, what do we expect tomorrow?
So a forecast, 77 degrees for the high, partly to mostly cloudy, stray shower or thunderstorm possible, winds 15 to 25 miles an hour. So still some wind that could play a factor. Also warmer, but you know, conditions not
tomorrow. So
yeah, conditions not great essentially.
Well, but it's conducive to higher speeds. I think, you know, the warmer it gets, the hotter the track gets, slicker it can be. So maybe that's conducive. You know, similar to today, outside of the rain, of course, is maybe some of these guys can find a sweet spot. But as we know, whatever happens today and tomorrow, it can be 90 and sunny on race day. So you almost got to throw out, you know, at least half of what you learn over the next couple of days based on what the track does and the track conditions are.
This from Nathan Brown of the Star, just in on the on-track plan for Friday. Starting at 9, Fittipaldi, Ware, Chilton, Karam, Simona DiSilvestro will run 9 to 10 a.m. to complete their programs. Vets that only ran 90 minutes will go 10 to 11. And then the full field 11-6. So again, the time to watch essentially 11-6. That's the all skate.
And you know, I think the biggest thing, you know, for me as a fan out of these tests, A, it's good to see cars on track. It's good to see cars on track at the speedway, especially. Almost a full field, 32 cars represented. But also, you know, it gives the journalists pretty much their first real access to these drivers in a long time. And I think you get a lot of rumors out of tests like this. You know, we're already hearing the Robert Wickens potentially something. You know, this is really kind of where the rumor reel really starts, because you have boots on the ground, so to speak, and people talking to people that are talking, and, you know, all that goes. So that's almost exciting, as exciting as anything else, is really kind of seeing what everybody picks up and potentially things that could be going down either for the month of May or beyond.
As always, you can find us at newtrackrecordpodcast.com. You can find us on your favorite podcast platforms, Apple Podcasts. While you're there, do us a favor. If you follow us, give us a 5-star rating. And if you're really nice, write a review. In fact, got a new review this week. Thank you for that and the 5-star rating.
Was it nice?
It was very nice. It said the word legendary in it.
a trend.
Yeah, EMU Eagles was the username on Apple Podcasts. You can also follow us on Spotify, Overcast, CastBox, Player FM, Podchaser, episodes at 1380thefan.com, and also posted on the weekends at wowo.com. You can interact with us via email, newtrackrecordpodcast@gmail.com. Also, if you check out the website, don't forget to sign up for our weekly email so you never miss an episode. You can find us on Facebook, just like us, search for New Track Record. And our Twitter handle is IndyCar Podcast. And with that, time for the mailbag. And Justin, we have plenty to get to. Not that this is really a surprise, with everything on marketing and Peacock and all of that sort. But first, we had an email submission via the website. And
oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, so this was on the split stuff that I did not want to miss from the other week. So I thought this was interesting because we knew, you know, about the Indy split book that we had John Oriobitz on the other week, but there is apparently another option on all of that stuff. So as I search for it, of course, I can't find it.
Another, is it Tony George's book? Is it
no.
His words? Oh, okay. His story?
No, not quite. Not quite on that level.
You know, everybody's got an angle. Everybody has a different opinion of what went down. And you know, what would be... have we ever had anybody admit that they were wrong of that whole side? You know, because everybody had a side. Everybody had an opinion. Has anybody ever came out and said, you know what? I screwed up.
Well, no.
I think we have. I mean, all the entities involved, all the egos, all the opinions, all the, you know, ideas were not just one person or two people or, you know, a couple dozen people. A lot of people were involved. And I've never heard anybody come out and say, you know what, I shouldn't have done this or shouldn't have done that. So that's the really mind-boggling thing to me. I know there's a lot of prideful people involved on whatever side, but you know, people still not willing to admit that that they may have screwed up.
All right, so I found this submission via the website, and I'm going to butcher this name because they said hello from Ukraine. Alexei Hrushko. Apologize for butchering your name, but telling us, start to listen to your podcast this winter. It's great, but I have one remark on the Indy Split episode. It was mentioned that it's the first ever book on this topic, but it's not true. In 2015, The IndyCar Wars, the 30-year fight for control of American open wheel racing, was published. It contains the stories of Kart USAC split and wars, preconditions of the 94 to 96 split, parallel history of Kart IRL 96 to 2007, and their unification in 2008. It has some mistakes and lack of insight, as it was based solely on the periodics. I'm not sure if they mean periodicals, without interviewing of officials and team owners, but it's quite interesting to REIT. So thank you for that submission and letting us know. I think I have heard of that before, but I have not looked into it.
Yeah, I've heard of that, and I've also, as Alexei pointed out, have heard that it's not necessarily the most accurate of books either. I don't think it's a complete farce by any means, but I think it'll key people are left out, or key opinions or thoughts or ideas and stuff like that. So I don't think it's held in very high regard among public circles, whereas John Oriovitz, obviously, very well thought of in the racing world, and seems to have done a phenomenal job with this book. But yeah, good point by Alexei. There is another option out there.
All right. Looking at the Twitter mailbag, a lot on marketing, and we'll get to it. You had several tweets last week just kind of asking the question to IndyCar, the season's starting here in less than 2 weeks, and we've had very little acknowledgement of that. And right. So these are some of the responses from our listeners. Coach_Eckert, I think IndyCar Media sees their job as IMS, and each track has to promote themselves, which is the problem with ovals. Can't disagree with that one yourself.
One of the many problems with ovals, but yeah, I mean, it goes back to us talking last week about, IMS Productions and how involved or heavily involved they were, I think, previously in IndyCar Productions. Now we're hearing, Caleb, I think we mentioned last week that Roger Penske is trying to separate those. Was that something we talked about, or was that one of your brilliant ideas that has yet to come to fruition?
My idea is simply, as long as IMS and IndyCar are under the same ownership, we're always going to have this problem.
Right. I think it was what we were talking about was with the media rights deal with NBC, and IMS Productions was producing the content, or at least a fair amount of the content, as opposed to NBC, I believe that we were talking about.
Oh, yes. That's from the SBJ article. So that would be the in-house production versus outside for... Yeah, I forget the exact details, but yeah, that's what you're getting at, which I don't think is really, that would be more of a saving money on the costs and getting more money off the top for the TV deal for the future, which again, the TV deal expires end of this season.
Yeah. And who knows? I don't know if any of that affects IMS Productions in season in particular. That's no excuse for the lack of hype and lack of marketing for the beginning of the season, but that could be a reason why, if they're involved in the actual production of the races, broadcast production, then maybe that prevents them from maybe doing some of the things behind the scenes or the features that we're always clamoring for, that I'm sure we'll be repeating ourselves once the season starts in that regard. But, maybe that's part of the reason. I don't know.
NCAPTEEN 185 says, does IndyCar even know the start of the season is only a couple of weeks away? We had a lot of similar questions like this. One more before I forget. R. Cole on Will Langhorn telling us to answer your Will Langhorn question. Unfortunately, it's not mine. All I did was search Will on eBay, and that was the only item that showed up. So the Will Langhorn deep cut.
Credit to him, but if he's listening, I want to know if that thing sold and for how much.
I'm guessing it's still up there. Just a guess. Poet Shevchenko.
The initial bid was like, what, $1,600?
Yeah. Well, I think that was the list price. I don't know if that's
right,
the bid.
Right. Yeah, I don't think it was a bid. I think, list price. Big difference.
Poet Shevchenko tweeting us about the Juan Pablo Montoya Aero McLaren machine, the 86 car, which again, a tribute to Peter Revson with the pole with McLaren back in, I believe, 71. Telling us the white base with the matte black on the sides of the nose gives me vaguely a 1988 McLaren vibe. So you're thinking the Senna MP4 car. I kind of get that. I didn't like this car at first, but it's growing on me.
I saw it, I don't think I saw it on track today. I saw it actually being pushed out of the garage, and it definitely caught my eye, for sure. I feel just like you, Caleb. It wasn't very awe-inspiring when I first saw it, but like you, I saw it being pushed out of the garage today down Gasoline Alley, and it really, really shined, and I can't wait to see it in the sunshine. I think it will really gleam and look even better because, we did have, rain and clouds today.
This also from Poet Shevchenko, this on signing up for Peacock, and we have quite a few on this one. Already due through Xfinity, but might get a separate subscription. Interesting note in the article that non-US fans can stream through the IndyCar app. So, yeah, if you're not in the US, you can stream on the IndyCar app, which, isn't that amazing? I mean, it's about time that international fans get something nice.
Yeah, we saw IndyCar, and I'm sure we'll address it here in a little bit, announce their international package, and it's always polished, and I'd say it's propagandized, but it's released by IndyCar, so they make it sound all great on how many countries they're in and how and where and all that. I really love hearing from people in Canada or France or Japan or wherever to really get the inside story on just how good they have it to watch the events. And this, at least, is a step in the right direction. Remember when you couldn't get IndyCar app outside of Verizon? You could only get it on Verizon.
Yeah, that's true.
Let alone watch live stream races. Now you can get it across multiple platforms and watch races.
What a concept. And it's also live in Australia now.
Yeah, how about that? It helps to have a three-time Australian supercar winner come over, and Scott McLaughlin, to add to the interest that is already there with Will Power and Scott Dixon. So, that region, New Zealand and Australia getting some love, and I feel like I do think we're underestimating the effects of Scott McLaughlin. I think the TV deal is representative of that. Is Scott McLaughlin he's very comparable to the Dale Jr. of Australia in terms of popularity.
Yeah.
And owning the series, his home series, basically dominating the Australian Supercar Series. So by no means do I think we can gloss over just how big that is for Australia and for viewership over there and having Scott over here.
Ricardo, I mean, that's probably the only name bigger in Australian motorsport, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I posted a poll the other day. Have you signed up for Peacock yet? 69% said yes. 10% I will before the opener. 10% I will for May. 11% not signing up. I will say that is a lot higher than I expected.
The people that are actually signed up already?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree. I thought people would wait at least, till the start of the season. But, next week's the start of the season. So, being able to watch the test, obviously, Thursday, Friday is huge. And I think that's where a lot of people jumped on board. And then, Caleb, you were nice enough to send me the promo code that cut the money off on the front end.
Yeah, that's right. And, we tweeted this out earlier this week. But again, if you missed it, this is critical. This deal is good, I believe, through April 9th. So we record this Thursday night. It's good through Friday night, essentially. But if you're in the U.S. and you want to sign up for Peacock, $9.99 for 4 months. If you use the promo code... Now the code escapes me.
Is it Peacock?
Peacock Mania. That's what it is.
Peacock Mania.
That's for WrestleMania, which is on Peacock. So Peacock Mania... Oh. All caps. There you go. That's the code. $9.99 for 4 months. So that's a great deal. That gets you through most of the season when you look at it that way. So from those who replied who have signed up, Poet Shevchenko said, I did. Added the IndyCar test to my watch list. Hopefully the first thing that comes up when a user searches for something beginning with the letter I. I don't know if I added IndyCar to my watch list, but I didn't have any issues. I just went to sports and then it showed right up. Art Cole. Says, obviously, there's a new Law and Order series. That's funny. Jensen EV, I just bit the bullet and did an annual plan without those godforsaken commercials. I always told myself if the option to avoid commercials ever came up, I'd pay for that. Indy Nathan says, shows yes, but technically my answer is it was included with Comcast. Yeah, if you have Comcast, like Xfinity or Cox, it's already included. So lucky you. You get right. Peacock for free.
You do have to deal with Xfinity cable, though, which
true.
By all from everything I've heard is not the best experience.
Yeah. Rob underscore McMahon says we have Xfinity Internet, so they offer the Flex streaming box for free with Peacock Premium included. Hashtag winning. And let's see, Transocean Trojan. I've been subbed to Peacock because of Premier League coverage. It's a necessary evil if you want to see the Premier League in IndyCar. Meanwhile, on NBCSN, they will be playing Old Mecum Auto Auctions.
Yeah, that's. Have they moved all Premier League over to Peacock then? Or the majority? Or.
I think it's kind of half and half. I mean, big NBC has occasional matches, and then you'll see some stuff on Peacock, like exclusive, which they did that before with their Premier League streaming thing, and a lot of fans were not thrilled with that move.
I would imagine maybe big matches are on NBCSN, but the majority are on Peacock, potentially.
Yeah, I would guess that's kind of where that is trending, which is unfortunate, but that's kind of where we're at.
The times, for sure. You know, it's early for Peacock. It's not the friendliest interface.
It's searching and pulling up episodes. I found is for shows is not very user friendly.
Really, I'll admit I've watched one episode of the new Saved by the Bell series and that was when it was Peacock, when I had Peacock free, so I could watch one episode, and then I had to pay for the premium to get the rest of them. So that's the extent of my experience on top of watching the test today. It flashes up on my laptop, and it just seems like it's throwing a lot at me, and I'm not really sure where to go. So I'm sure they'll work it out, the tweaks and all that. But, the stream was fine. I had no issues.
Yeah, I didn't have issues either. I guess during the refresher portion that just wrapped up a bit ago as we are recording, the screen went out and then it came back. But I didn't really have any issues with that. All right, let's get into the marketing stuff because that's where the bulk of the tweets are from. First off, this from Nick J. Fletcher, just throwing this out there. TikTok is TikTok. I get it, but... this was as a couple days ago. NASCAR, 504 videos verified. Formula E, 63 videos verified. IMSA, 421 videos verified. IndyCar, 0 videos not verified. And posted the screenshots with that. And, you know, like we talked about TikTok the other week. And, you know, you got to, you know, we're old. We're not the people who IndyCar needs to be pulling in. But TikTok is a way to connect to a much younger audience, and I'm talking the, 10 to 25-year-old audience?
Right, and, you know, I've never been on TikTok. I couldn't tell you how it works. I think it's similar to Instagram. My wife is the expert, so maybe IndyCar needs to hire my wife to run their TikTok. But you have to go where the social media marketplace is. And, you know, the quote-unquote sexy social media platforms right now are Instagram, which has been for a while.
Yep.
And TikTok, which is, you know, recent, which is, you know, what would you say, a year or so, Caleb?
Yeah, I mean, TikTok got really big last March due to the pandemic.
Yeah. So you have to go where the people are, and IndyCar's not doing that. In terms of, I don't even know what their Instagram presence is, to be honest. Now, I only use Instagram through work. I don't use it in my day-to-day life, but I'm on there enough through work that I don't really know what their presence is. I'm sure they have a presence. I don't know how effective it is, but you could say that Instagram and TikTok are it right now, and if you're not utilizing both of those to your fullest capacity, then you're missing an opportunity, particularly when you preach and preach and preach about reaching younger demographics. And you're obviously not doing everything you need to be doing if you do not have a single video up on TikTok, which I feel should be important, considering those series that were named have a presence on TikTok, enough to the point that they're verified.
And I will say, again, that was as of a couple days ago, so I don't know if they've started doing TikTok videos as of the test. I don't have the TikTok app. I've been on TikTok many times. I've never downloaded the app. I watched it a lot, like late March, early April of last year, and then kind of went away from it. And then now I feel like it's kind of come back again. One thing I will say, I've noticed on Instagram, and it's kind of crossed over to Twitter. I don't know. There must be a reason, but I have noticed that every graphic that IndyCar does always is like a blue, black, and white colors for everything.
Really?
Yeah.
On Instagram?
On Instagram, for sure, last season.
That's laziness, and I'll tell you, because that's what I do, basically, at work. When we have, like, I use a lot of different apps for graphic design because I'm not a graphic designer, so I need all the help I can get. And Canva is the one that I use the most.
Okay.
And it comes with a lot of different templates, and basically you can pick a template. You can change different things. You can change color patterns to match your business or corporation or whatever, and then you can use that. And sometimes I'll find myself, if I put something out there and I'm running short on time or I just don't want to mess with it, I'll go in and use the same one again, just change the wording or add a different image or whatever I need to do. But the template remains the same, basically. So that's telling me that IndyCar, whoever's running that, is probably doing the very same thing that I'm doing, is, look, you have a series of templates that you've used, and you're just going to keep using those templates. And that, I can tell you, is not the way to go when you're really trying to attract eyes, when you're trying to grab the attention of people. As you know, when you're just scanning through Instagram or even TikTok, you're just scrolling until something catches your eye, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, our logo, when we redid the logo right before, what, the start of last season? So I was told by our digital team, you need to have eye-popping colors. So that's why we have the fiery orange color on the logo. It's more eye-popping, so you notice it when you're looking, you know, at podcast feeds and whatnot.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's just something that, you know, the reds and blacks, and it's not doing it. You need to have some flash there. And if you're just using the same templates and changing the information, then that definitely gets lost in the shuffle, for sure.
All right, so I'm going to run down a lot of these. First off, on the Defy Everything campaign, which I thought, you know, hey, that's a different title. It's interesting, but a lot of people tweeted at us with that. It's no Indy Rivals, which I will say I think is my favorite, and I actually really like that campaign. So let's see what we got here. First off, NK Harden saying, I'm sure no less than 100 people will be sending this to you guys. That's the Defy Everything tweet. Also saying, I like the This Isn't a Parade line, looking at you, NASCAR, and F1. Notable only because the IndyCar series liked that tweet. So someone's paying attention. Also, this from Nick J. Fletcher, talking about marketing campaign, or sorry, no, this from R. Cole. Can't believe I still have these great marketing slogans, and it's I Am Indy stickers.
Very nice.
Classic. So we have the...
We make fun of I Am Indy, but here we are talking about it still.
Right?
So while it was kind of a joke, it worked. People still talk about I Am Indy. So, you know, maybe it was a better marketing campaign that we initially gave it credit for.
That is a very valid point. I mean, we trash it, and it's kind of this inside joke for IndyCar fans who were around back in, what, 2006, 2007, roughly?
But mid-2000s.
Yeah, we still talk about it, so that is an excellent point.
Name me two other marketing slogans between then and now.
I could name Indy Rivals off the top of my head because I think that one was actually very effective, and I like that one. But last year was a different breed, and that was around for like 2 weeks.
Yeah, I think it died after like 15 days.
I think a lot of that was due to the pandemic, and they wanted to scale back.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, I mean, talking Indy Rivals, here we are 15 years later, at least, still talking about it.
You mean I Am Indy?
I Am Indy, I'm sorry.
But Indy Rivals, I think, is the other one we still talk about.
I think Indy Rivals was one, too, yeah.
Taking a look at some comments on, you know, we guessed when there was a Foyt announcement coming for this morning. Fourth car at Indy turned out to be J.R. Hildebrand, as we mentioned earlier. Nick J. Fletcher with a great tweet that I'm going to say for tweets of the week, actually. It was so funny. N.K. Harden saying A.J. Foyt the fourth back in a car for the 500. Fun fact, he's only 36, same age as Pagenaud. Haven't seen him in forever, so it feels like he should be 48 by now. Also, fun fact, at 36 years old, A.J. still had 21 more years to race an IndyCar, not even halfway through his career yet, which is wild.
Right.
And then some responses. Trackside Online. His longevity was amazing. AJ the fourth keeps busy running the wine bar and being a hockey dad. He's married to one of Jim Irsay's daughters, so he's got a pretty good life going.
Yeah, he's fine.
And R. Cole says, brings up a good question, which has the best wine? Andretti, Foyt, Danica, feel like I'm missing some. Those are the only ones I know. I couldn't tell you. Do you have any? Have you tried any of them?
I've had Foyt wine back in my newspaper journalism days. Let's see, there was a sponsorship announcement with a Fort Wayne company down at the winery in Speedway, and I went down there, and yeah, it was nice. So that's the only wine I've ever had. Not had Andretti wine, and I didn't even know there was a Danica wine.
Yeah, I forgot there was a Danica wine. I think I'd heard of that before, but that was probably announced several years ago. Some other questions. This from C. Clinken. Fascinating to see Foyt go from a team we thought could be on the brink of collapsing to one that appears to have one car competing for podiums, four fully funded 500 rides, and a big-time new sponsor all in about 12 months. Excellent points there.
Right. I'm running out of opportunities to rag on Foyt, and maybe we can effort to get Larry Foyt on the show, and I'll come clean and give him props, because I'm not sure if it's Larry or they've brought on, you know, some added personnel to attack this thing, attack the financials. They've done a phenomenal job. You know, we've kind of reserved our praise for Foyt until they showed some results on track. But I think it's unfair not to recognize what they've done. And that text said it all. I mean, once ABC Supply went away, you felt there was, you know, very real possibility that that team could go away in a couple years. And now here they are a couple years after the fact and after a pandemic that further hit everyone's finances in IndyCar. And they're sitting at four bullets in the gun for the 500. And as you mentioned, four fully funded cars and some new relationships that, you know, could, if cultivated, could be very fruitful for years to come. So kudos, Foyt.
Oh, absolutely. A couple of tweets regarding testing today. This from Jeremy from HBG. I just got home from errands. I have impeccable timing. That was right as it started raining. Jamin T14 had about a 20-minute window at work to watch some cars at IMS. And we're under yellow. Glad he walked out. At least my Peacock stream worked. That's in reference to VK's crash earlier. So that wraps up the mailbag. Again, as always, you can send us your tweets, also Facebook messages, or email, or submit via newtrackrecordpodcast.com, and we'll get to your questions, comments, concerns, rants, everything in the following week's episode. Busy mailbag. Not that that's a surprise.
No, not at all. Do you want to talk the new marketing campaign? I don't know if it's in our news and notes segment, but we kind of traded text. When I saw it, how I knew about it was my phone was updating apps, and I had an IndyCar app, so I was like, oh, maybe they actually put something new on the IndyCar app. And that's what popped up, the Defy Everything or Defy Anything, whatever it is. What did you think? I mean, at least the initial hype video, I guess you call it a hype video, that was released with the marketing announcement.
What's the word? Where it's like flashing on the screen. What is the word I'm looking for?
Like in your face type?
Yes.
Thing? Very.
I like the phrase defy everything. I do like that. Not a lot of talking by the drivers in the video, if I'm not mistaken.
It was not very exciting talking. It was very much I'm reading off a card talking.
In fact, I found a tweet here from Racing Nation TV on the IndyCar campaign slogans. So 2015 was Indy Rivals. 2016 was the heart of racing. I don't even remember that. 17 was IndyCar Next. 18, IndyCar Now. I guess there wasn't one in 2019 because 2020 is a different breed. And then, of course, now we have Defy Everything.
So one was IndyCar Next, and the next year was IndyCar Now?
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
Okay. I do vaguely remember IndyCar Next. I don't remember IndyCar Now, but that's just horrible to pair those together.
Yeah, and back-to-back years.
Yeah. That just seems like they had one meeting and they set a 2-year plan that's like, okay, this year's is going to be IndyCar Next, and we already have next year, so we don't even need this meeting next year. It's IndyCar Now. We'll see you in 2 years. And then they couldn't even come up with anything to beat that, so they didn't even use anything 2 years after that.
Yeah, it's I don't know. We'll see how this campaign goes. I like the title. I think it's unique.
Yeah, it's kind of wordy, not the Defy part, but like the entire slogan, you know, and I think Scott Dixon says it, in the commercial or in the spot. It had no, the video was good. IndyCar never struggles in the video department, in my opinion, whether it's the emotion of drivers in the car, whether it's close racing, whether it's crashes, whatever they're trying to put into 55 seconds or a minute, whatever this was, I don't think they ever have a shortage of footage to use. It's just trying to bring out the emotion in some of these drivers is difficult. And I know they're just, you know, probably sitting in a studio or whatever, just reading off cards, but it's just it's much more effective to me watched with whatever your device is on mute. I don't think you lose a darn thing if it's on mute. I really don't.
Yeah. Which is, the video, like you said, video production is always there, and that's to be expected. I mean, they have great people in place. It's just the marketing side, and, you know, sometimes they use outside agencies, sometimes it's in-house. I think it just depends on the year.
Right. And I don't think it would hurt to flash names. And I know, you know, because they were showing, you know, montages of drivers and all that. It wouldn't hurt to flash some names up there, especially the newer drivers, because I think some people are going to see, Arenas VK or an Alex Palou, be like, I have no idea who that person is.
Excellent point.
But, overall, it's not the worst. I now look at it and says, okay, IndyCar was going to ramp up their hype this week with the test and then lead into Barber, which then leads into St. Pete, which leads into Texas, which leads into Indy. It's very much a successive week type thing coming up starting this week. I get it. I understand the plan. It's just, you should have started it earlier, in my opinion.
Yeah, I guess I understand waiting to the build up for the test, but it's like we feel like we have more build up to the test than we do for the season opener.
Yeah, totally agree. And I think that goes back to our original point, Caleb, is that, you know, the marketing departments within IndyCar and IMS focus more on the Indianapolis 500 than IndyCar, in our opinion. So this just furthers that opinion with this marketing campaign really being launched the week of testing at the Speedway.
All right, let's talk about some racetrack announcements as we shift into news and notes on this edition. Bad news first, Toronto, not looking very good at this point. Racer.com had an article, you know, on Toronto and their updated plan, and of course that came out just before they had another lockdown in Ontario. Not looking good at all for Toronto to happen, and I don't think this is a surprise. IndyCar said that they had a backup plan in case where they could rent another track. They're trying to ask if they could, you know, move their construction element, you know, prior to July 1, because the Toronto mayor has a mandate that bars outdoor entertainment and construction of temporary events prior to July 1st. But if they could start a week or two before then, they could get the track build done. But again, with this third wave in Ontario, not looking promising.
No, and a new wave of restrictions up there, if I saw correctly today and yesterday, that's really going to be problematic. And we talked to Rob Howden last week, a native Canadian, although I don't know how often he's ever home by following all these race series all over the country. But he didn't sound very optimistic at all that this race would happen. And it sounds like IndyCar is working on an alternative and a plan. And I think they would like Green Savory Promotions to be in charge of wherever the race would be, considering they'll go for a second straight year without the revenue of a Toronto race. So at least IndyCar seems to be ahead of it a little bit, but it's just unfortunate that for the second straight year, it'll look like that we'll not be going to Toronto.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of people are throwing out, ooh, you know, Iowa Speedway, Watkins Glen, but, I mean, reality is I would expect an extra race at Mid-Ohio since that's, like, what, the week before on the schedule?
Yeah, so, you know, is it the same weekend? Did we have two at Mid-Ohio last year?
Yeah, we did. We had a doubleheader at Mid-Ohio last year. So it's July 4th weekend, I believe, at Mid-Ohio this year. And so I could see it, turning into a doubleheader.
I mean, depending on the schedule, I'm not sure what else is on track at Mid-Ohio that weekend, but I think Mid-Ohio would absolutely love to be on board with a doubleheader for July 4th weekend. I mean, for campers alone, that big time.
For sure. Let's get to positive news on racetracks. So it was announced a couple days ago, Big Machine will be the title sponsor, the Music City GP. I don't think this is a surprise with Scott Borchetta and his motorsports ties and tie-in to this event. They'll have activation, include product displays with its Spirits line, signage, having recording artists perform during the weekend. That is the key. We're going to have some big concert announcements for that event. I would expect, in the next couple of weeks for that event? And with the announcement, they dropped, they had an IndyCar that was lifted onto a rooftop in downtown Nashville. So they pulled out all the stops for the event. And, you know, big announcement, exciting. You felt like a title sponsor was just a matter of when, not if, for that race.
Right. And I think, you know, in terms of this event, easily becomes the third biggest event on the schedule, at least. And I know purists and traditionalists are going to scoff at this, but it could eclipse Long Beach.
Yeah.
In terms of an iconic event. In terms of who's involved.
It's not going to, on the longevity standpoint, obviously, but I think as far as the buzz and, you know, the feeling around the event, I feel like this could surpass it this year.
For a city that's growing, and the beautiful thing is that I think this is the key for any successful street race, and Long Beach has perfected this for sure, is that it's not just the racing. And while you and I, are excited the most about the race, there are other people that are going to be excited about the concerts that are going to be there and the acts once they announce it. There's also going to be people that are really excited about the nightlife that it's going to present in Nashville. And, you know, everything being close by and all that stuff. So it's going to offer a bunch of different things for a bunch of different people. And that's the beauty of it. I think it's not just a race, and either you're into it or you're not. It's the race is only one piece of it. And you may not care one iota outside of race day what's going on. And I'm sure there's a fair amount of people at Long Beach when they show them in the high rises. A fair amount aren't IndyCar fans, but they get to go out on their balconies and watch race cars go around, of course. And I think that's where a lot of fans, to be honest, are going to be coming from Nashville. They're going to be curious about it. They're going to be coming down for concerts. They're going to be coming down for parties and, you know, beer tents and all that stuff. And, oh yeah, by the way, there's also cars going around on a street course.
Oh, there's a race?
Yeah. Really? Don't worry. I'm sure there'll be a fair amount of inebriated people that we'll be surprised if there was a race.
That's always the joke with Long Beach and street races among any car fans. You know, there are people there that have no clue what's happening. They're just there for the party.
They're wondering why they can't cross this street.
Why do I have to go over this bridge over the road?
I'm just trying to get home, and this giant fence is in my way.
This from Nathan Brown of the Indy Star. We're getting dangerously close to selling out Sunday. That's George Dennis, president of Zoom Motorsports, which is the promoter for the race at Barber Motorsports Park. He said that on Trackside the other day, earlier this week. Also clarify, they don't have a specific capacity limit. It's all about parking spaces with only 5 lots. So the difference with Barber this year compared to years past is that normally people, they have limited parking inside of the facility, but a lot of the parking is outside the track, and then you take a shuttle in. But because they're only doing inside parking, obviously the paddock probably will not be open, so that opens up, you know, parking that would normally be for people with, you know, credentials and pit passes and whatnot. But they have very limited parking inside, and so to me it sounds like they are making the best of what they can for this, but it's not going to be, you know, Barber in years past, I mean, they could get 45 to 50,000 people on race day.
Yeah, what are they thinking closer to? Is it closer to 15 to 20?
I haven't seen a number. I mean, we know that St. Pete, for example, can allow up to 20,000 fans per day. You know, for Barber,
it's no holds bar down here in Florida, let me tell you what.
Oh, I'm sure. For Barber, I'm not really sure. You know, the parking, you have museum area, and then you just have some grassy areas that turn into parking lots. So it's not really like a set, you know, parking. There's not a lot of surface parking is what I'm saying. So a lot of people are bussed in from outside the track parking it. You know, there's like, I think a Bass Pro Shops or something that's near that, you know, you can take a bus in. But, you know, 15,000, 20,000, maybe. I'm not real sure, because that kind of changes things on the availability, and it explains why they're saying, you know, tickets are going fast.
Well, and that's an encouraging thing, because George Barber wouldn't have agreed to have this event with the limited capacity if he couldn't make it work financially. And for him to be close to, quote unquote, selling out the event in terms of capacity with the parking spaces has to be exciting for him, with the uncertainty of if people are going to come back or, you know, right away. And that's something you and I have gone back and forth, Caleb, for. So at least at Barber Motorsports Park, it seems to be an indication that things are returning to quote unquote normal, that they're getting that many people to come out for the event. So encouraging to see. Hopefully by 2022, we're back to full normal capacity at Barber.
Oh, for sure. And then this from Mid-Ohio. Their event tickets are now on sale. They have advanced pricing available through April 26th. MidOhio.com/tickets. And again, another plug. I have 3 race day only tickets for St. Pete on sale. Contact me via Twitter or whatever through the podcast if you'll like them. They're good seats near the entrance to turn 1. So great tickets. I can't go. I have a prior conflict. So if you'd
in
like.
In order to be eligible to get those, Caleb, they have to leave a 5-star review.
I mean, I would prefer that, but I mean, I will sell these at a discount if someone is interested. They're 3 tickets. So
yeah,
I have them via email.
Move the date, right? Back a week?
Yeah. Yep. I could have gone, you know. I thought I'll just go, you know, in March of next year. I wasn't concerned about it. And then this whole COVID thing has continued a bit longer than I think everyone anticipated. And then when it was moved back on the schedule, I was like, well, now I can't go. So, which is a bummer. I've been to that race before. It's a really fun event and really wish I could go this year.
You know, it's until I heard it today on the stream, I really didn't think about it. Is, you know, we start the race, start the season next week, and then we go to St. Pete, and then we go to Texas, and then we're at Indy for the GP. I mean, it's we're hitting it pretty rapid fire. I think there's a week break in there, here and there. But by and large, starting this week, really, with the test, it's full speed ahead for sure. So I don't want to say it snuck up on us, but it's almost like we get into a routine of saying, wow, here it is, off season, it's taking forever. And then next thing you know, oh, crap, season's starting.
Yeah, well, you mentioned, so we have the Barber Race April 18th and St. Pete April 25th, Genesis 300 May 1st, Expel 375 May 2nd, again, both those at Texas, week off, and that week off is Mother's Day weekend. And then you have the GMR Grand Prix May 15th, and then the following weekend's qualifying, and then the following weekend's the Indy 500 on May 30th. And just like that, I mean, we're 6 races into the schedule.
Right. And then, we're in the thick of it for sure. So, it's a really exciting time for sure. Just really ready to see these cars. At least we get a tease this weekend to watch them, Thursday, Friday. And it's a beautiful thing. Tomorrow, I'm not sure how much I can tune in throughout the course of the day. Not sure what the wife has planned on our final day here in Pensacola Beach. But, I imagine, is it archived pretty quick on Peacock? Can I go watch conceivably today and maybe do that tomorrow or when I get home if I want to watch 7 or 8 hours of coverage of practice? But I'm wondering just how it works on Peacock, whether as of right now, could somebody go in and watch the archived day one test from Indy?
Yeah, that is the ultimate question, right? And I just searched IndyCar on the site and nothing came up, so that's concerning. Trying again elsewhere on the app. Again, this is just on my phone, so that probably changes things a little bit. So I'm on under sports.
Okay.
I'm not seeing it anywhere, to be honest. And I'm scrolling. They have motorsports section. A playlist of IndyCar news, but that looks like it's about it. So it's probably not up yet. I'm guessing it will be up eventually. I would think it would be up fairly soon.
I would hope. I mean, I know it's probably more difficult to do than in theory, but I don't understand how you cannot just have a live event that immediately then archives and posts.
Yes. I would agree.
That's me. One thing I noticed with the app, the IndyCar app, is when you go to the schedule, you can actually have it sync with your calendar to put the race events up on your calendar, which kind of got a chuckle out of me because I don't need it, right? I mean, if it was a calendar that put up every Peacock broadcast or every network broadcast. And it was every test and every practice session, all that. I could find use in that. I don't know how many people are using the app that also need reminded when the races are.
Well, I mean, it is nice for planning purposes. Yeah, I'm looking up the subscribe to calendar. That is interesting. Yeah. But yeah, I just use the app for all of those things.
Yeah, maybe people will find it useful. I don't know, maybe people out there that are listening found it useful. I just found it amusing. Because at first I saw it, and I was like, oh, sweet, this will put up every single practice session, everything, and I'll know exactly when they are. But it just does the race times, unfortunately.
Yeah, that would be helpful with every session, like you said. That would be super helpful. It's kind of like the old school, like Google RSS feed or whatever, back, 10 years ago on the internet, 15 years ago.
Yeah, back in those futuristic days. Now look at this.
The Netscape era. I don't think it's that old, but that's the comparison. All right, so a couple other small news and notes items to get to. David Malukas led the Indy Lights test at Barber earlier this week as the Road to Indy had essentially their spring training test session earlier this week with all three series. NBC confirmed the broadcast location start times for the season. Not really any surprises there. As far as the start times on everything, we went over this a few episodes ago. The start times are actually pretty favorable if you're an East Coast fan, and I think that's the key. it's good for fans at the track. Now, the TV team, that was announced, not really any major surprises. Lee Diffie, play-by-play, Townsend Bell, and Paul Tracy will be analysts. Pit reporters are Marty Snyder, Kelly Stavis, Dave Burns, Kevin Lee, and Dylan Welch. So, not really any shock there. No Robin Miller, but again, his health, I think, is factoring in. I'm sure he'll still do some contributions, especially for May. Again, everyone will still complain, no Jan Beekes. I understand that.
I will complain.
Yeah, no disagreement there from me on that part as well. And speaking of some broadcast, you know, news and announcements. So Rob Howden, who is set to be the pit reporter for IndyCar, tweeting out earlier this week, "I'm excited about 2021 and my new position with the Road to Indy. I'm enjoying it all here at Barber. That said, I made the tough decision to back down my IndyCar radio effort this season, working just the Indy Lights races. The hope is to be back on the IndyCar pit lane in 2022. Again, I think I understand that's due to just transitioning to this new position, make sure you get everything, you know, all the ducks in a row for the first year and as you adjust to that new role. But it's still exciting for Rob, though, with that Road to Indy spot, because it's like, duh, of course he should be, you know, official Road to Indy position. And then also...
Oh, yeah, he's the guru, man.
That's right. Joey Barnes, JoeyBarnes85 on Twitter, tweeting out some personal news. Officially joined Racer Mag and will take on the role of news editor. Excited for the start of this journey and the potential that follows. I'll still be around the racing playground to write and social content too. So 2021 just got a lot more fun. I believe he was with Auto Week before. Is that correct?
I do believe so, yes.
So congrats, Joey. Happy to see you back on the racing beats and covering stuff on the racing side as a news editor. So that's good stuff there. Let's see, a few other things to wrap up. Baylor Basketball, their official account, Baylor MBB, tweeted out the photo. This was awesome. Taste of Victory, tagged the IMS Twitter handle, and it's a bottle of milk with the Baylor logo with a national champion, and people in the replies saying, you know, I want to buy this. Can we buy this? So, hey, that's some great press.
That's awesome.
The Final Four intro had Mark Janes of the IMS and IndyCar Radio Network doing, you know, some voiceover stuff for the CBS promo, like the intro to the broadcast. So that was cool. And they tied in, you know, all the racing cliches with the, you know, who's gonna, you know, be the first to hit the checkered flag, that kind of thing. But that's still cool.
Right.
Some great publicity. There's a blood drive. This is cool that they're doing. IndyCar Series partnering with the Red Cross. And if you give blood between April 1st, which is already over, through the 15th, you can register for a trip for four to the 2022 Indy 500. So
okay.
rcblood.org/Indy500, that is how you book online. In fact, I booked to give blood because I have incentives for work to give blood. So that's also why I'm doing it. But I'm like, hey, might as well do it now.
Yeah.
It's a pretty good deal.
Right? Absolutely. Sign up, folks.
And let's see if there's anything else really major to get to before we get to tweets of the week. And we have a couple of tweets that I missed. Sending our best wishes to IndyCarDJ32 on Twitter, who I have met several times, a big IndyCar fan. He actually is out of the hospital after having COVID and has had a lot of complications due to that. So best wishes to him and a full recovery. I don't know if you saw that earlier in the week, Justin, but that's pretty scary stuff that he has to
absolutely
go through with that. All right, missed a couple
though.
What?
Yeah, is it good? He's released from the hospital?
Yes, correct.
He's doing okay. Well, at least that's good. Yeah.
So now it's, you know, all the extra stuff, dialysis, for example, for now. So hopefully things will continue to improve. Some tweets that I missed from people, Incaptine185, CC, what is this? The first mention of a season opener, a race not named the Indy 500. There is a God. That was a tweet on IndyCar saying, 11 days until the green flag drops for the season opener at Barber Motor Park.
there you go.
Nick J. Fletcher, introducing the number 98 Andretta Herta Halper Autosport with Marco Andretti and Kurt Agajanian, Group 1001 and Gleaners Food Bank of Indiana. Hashtag no one runs on empty Honda. Powered by Delora, driven by Firestone. The Marco Andretti entry jokes just write themselves.
Yeah, they do. And, you know, maybe that's a joke that can continue if he can win the 500 and say, how do we get all those those words on the announcement for sure in the headline?
And then Vicky Lynn 26 replying to Peacock tweet, you know, on if you'd sign up, and saying, I would if I could, but I can't, so I won't. Well, that is true, but you can access it on the IndyCar app, which I think is even better, at least for this test, which is, yeah, I would say, an even better deal.
Yeah, absolutely. And then hopefully maybe they're working on stuff. I know I got on, and I don't know how it is for you, Caleb, is I still cannot get Netflix on the Amazon Fire Stick. I cannot get Peacock. So,
yeah, I'm trying to think. I use Roku, so.
Yeah, and you can get it. Now, I can get it on my computer, obviously, going to the website and all that stuff, but I cannot download it into my app store on my laptop. And I have a, what do I have, an HP, Microsoft. And it's not on the Amazon Fire Stick either yet. So, minor inconvenience. It's just, I wish, you know, when I'm home, I could watch it in my living room on my Fire Stick. You know, I have it on the PlayStation 4, which I think is kind of weird. It's not on the Fire Stick, but it's on the PlayStation 4. But, yeah, I'm sure it'll be added at some point. But it's just kind of a minor inconvenience.
All right, so I think that covers the tweets that we missed. Are you ready for tweets of the week? Anything that we missed, though, before that?
I don't think so. It's been an exciting week of announcements and a lot of positivity. And, you know, let's have a lot of laps under green on Friday at the Speedway.
It's kind of a bummer that they did this Thursday, Friday, so that we only get day one of the test.
Kind of split the coverage. Yeah, by the time we talk about it next week, people are going to be like, that's old news, man. We got to talk about the race upcoming.
Exactly. All right. So tweets of the week. First one from Beyond the Flag, at beyond_the_flag on Twitter. Elio in something other than a Team Penske car looks like when Tom Brady Bucks pictures were first released.
It's tough to see that yellow submarine and remember that Scott McLaughlin's in it.
This from Tony DeZinno, one of two of his tweets that make tweets of the week this week. Ladies and gentlemen, the April 1st IMSA post has made it to Miller's mailbag. That one talking about IMSA running on dirt. I don't know if you read that.
Yes, I did. The guy was on a rant about how everybody's trying dirt and all that stuff. And it was just a typical Robbins mailbag this week. Let's just leave it at that.
This from Nick J. Fletcher. Now, I mentioned I was saving this for tweets of the week because it was that good. Talking about Foyt and what their announcement was going to be earlier today. They're announcing the third car will be ran out of a shop in Alaska. They're also adding a fourth car. It's going to be ran out of a shop in Maine.
Hysterical. When I read that, literally was laughing. So funny. And not out of the realm of possibility. Who knows?
And then final tweet of the week, this from Tony DeZinno as well. The Indy 500 entry list is almost set, barring a few anticipated confirmations. Even cooler is that the season opens in less than 2 weeks with five races that will get run before the 500.
Yeah.
People have been saying it more and more. Did you know the IndyCar season starts in basically a week?
Yes. And finally, the IndyCar marketing allowed us to, or reminded us, it's only 11 days. Until the season starts. But we could dive into the weeds on how many, you know, tweets and how many posts and all that stuff about each and or. But yes, you know, IndyCar continues to preach that the Indy 500 is the only race that they have, yet they complain or wonder why people aren't tuning in to the rest of them.
Chicken or egg, right?
It is. It's very much. But, you know, devil's advocate, you could say, look, the Indianapolis 500 pays the bills for a lot of the other races, so they need to have a big splash for that. I understand that, but I don't think it's an either-or proposition. I don't think it's one or the other, which IndyCar seems to go that way, and they always pick the Indy 500.
Yeah, no, I think if your other events are strong, which, to be fair, pre-pandemic, the other events outside of, you know, Iowa and Toronto, we had questions on, and Iowa's off the schedule for this year. you know, could come back as a rental if Toronto's off the schedule, go figure. But those are, you know, the events that we weren't sure of. But the other events, pretty strong. Of course, we'll see the ones that didn't run at all last year, you know, let's see, Barber, Portland, Long Beach. I'm sure I'm missing a few others. We'll see how they fare this year. But, you know, that's kind of the question mark. And, you know, title sponsorships are up for all the races. We have a solid field of, you know, 23, 24 to 25 or 6 cars at every race outside the 500. We could have 35 or 36 cars at Indy. So everything looks positive. But again, it's always that question mark of, you know, does the Indy 500 get more attention at the expense of the rest of the series?
I think the answer is yes. But, you know, if after the year we came off of in 2020, if you would have said, hey, look, middle April or early April, we're going to have 32 cars, confirmed cars for the 500 at a test. We're heading into the season with increased car count, increased sponsorship on the cars, which I think we can all agree that that is fact. And, you know, successful events that are, you know, really looking strong as they come back. I think we would have taken it. So by no means do I want to make it sound like, you know, we're finding the negative in a hill full of positives, because there's definitely a lot to be excited about here as we get the season started.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, like you said, coming off the pandemic, you know, we would have thought, well, will we have a season next year? Probably, because Penske took over. Otherwise, that was a serious question mark. And then also, you know, what kind of field? You know, 20 cars, maybe, you know, 21,
yeah.
22? No, we're 24 to 26 is solid.
We talk about John Oriovitz doing a great job with his Indy Split book. I think it would make a fascinating book in a couple years, looking back at the sequence from when Roger Penske bought IndyCar and Indianapolis 500 and Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and to maybe a couple months after the first quote-unquote normal Indy 500, after next year. You know, I mean, I think that a story on these 2-3 years would just be fascinating.
I mean, you could just call it like the man who saved the Indy 500, you know, and he didn't even realize it at the time.
He didn't even realize what he was doing, right?
But it worked out. Well, enjoy the rest of your vacation in Florida. We'll see you back in studio next week as we get set to preview the season opener, the IndyCar season, our 2021 IndyCar season preview episode set to come next week. Finally, the offseason will be over a week from now. So for Justin Kinney, I am Caleb Hatch. Thanks for joining us on New Track Record Podcast.
Podcasts by Federated Media. Podcasts by Federated Media.